All right, so let's learn over here. Let's learn over here about espionage, spying. Vayalu vayosudu es aretz mi midbar tzin ad rechoyv lovei chamos. Okay, so vayalu, they ascended. We're talking about the Meraglim over here. They went out to Eretz Yisrael and they spied in the land mi midbar tzin. We're doing something from Sheni. Mi midbar tzin ad rechoyv until rechoyv lovei chamos. These are two places. Midbar tzin is one place. Rechoyv. Remember, we learned in the morning that the Midbar is called by five names in the Torah. Five different names. And one of the names of the Midbar is called Midbar Tzin. Ad Rechoiv. Rechoiv is the name of a place. I have no idea what this is. And Rechoiv is Levo Chamos. It is towards Chamos. Chamos, the third place. Let's see Rashi. Rashi it says, Mi Midbar Tzin ad Rechoiv Levo Chamos. Holchu begvula bo'erech uberechav k'min gam. So Rashi here tells us what is the meaning. They travel the width and the length of like a gam. What is the word gam? Gam is like the letter L. Okay, it's a Greek letter. Gam. Okay, I'm assuming it's a Greek letter. Like the letter L. Holchu ruach gvul deroimis. They travel along the ruach deroimis, the southern portion, the south. So the south, which part of Eretz Yisrael is the south. So the south is basically like Egypt, down south, okay? Along the south. From the east all the way until the west. The Mediterranean is the west. And I guess we're, I don't know, what is that? It was Saudi Arabia? What is on the west? The west of, I'm sorry, the east of Eretz Yisrael. On a map. Let's go look at a map. Why don't we go look at a map?
Jordan wasn't around.
Not Jordan. Okay, map. Huh? Map of Israel. Images. Okay, let's take any image over here. Here is Israel. All these maps. Okay, look at any map. Let's see, political map. Map of Israel, the Middle East. No, where's the map? It's not a map. Okay, here's a map. This is my way. Let me get this out of my way. I can't see. Okay, so this is a map of modern day Israel. Okay, I'm surprised they even call it Israel. Okay, so you see over here, first thing you look for in the map is Yerushalayim. Here is Yerushalayim. You can see this? You can see this? Blaze, you can see this?
Yeah. You see
over here, Sharm. So over here, we have to look at the biblical Israel. Biblical Israel, I assume, goes much further down. Okay, I assume it goes much further down. I don't know, maybe not. I'm not even so sure. Where does Israel... So over here it says that they traversed the southern portion of Eretz Yisrael from east to west. What is east? East, we associate the east with the Mediterranean. Is that really Gaza? Where does Eretz Yisrael end? By Gaza? Maybe it does. I don't know. So let's make believe it does. Let's just, for argument's sake, now. Kahan Yunus. Okay, that's the tip. This is the tip of the West Bank. Not the West Bank. That's Gaza. Here's little teeny piece of land called Gaza, and that's a city there called Kahan Yunus in Gaza. Let's make believe for argument's sake that this is the southern tip. So they went along from west to east. So west is the Yam HaMelach. The Yam HaMelach, what's this? What do they call it? The Dead Sea. What's this? What's this thing called? This body of water. That's also the Dead Sea? This area over here? What's this area called?
That's the west side?
This is the west. Yeah.
Is the east side or west side?
What? What are you referring to? I'm sorry, Mr. Rapper. This is of the Yarden. Yeah. So this is the east side of the Yarden. Right there. No, the Kinneret's higher up. Isn't the Kinneret higher up?
Yeah. That's
on top.
Dead Sea.
So the Dead Sea has two parts. It has two parts.
Yeah.
This is a little teeny channel connecting the main chunk of the Dead Sea to this area over here. They see this
That's
little...
Midbar Paran? That's Midbar Paran.
No, Midbar Paran is down the bottom. Midbar Paran is down
where
here.
Where from, no? This, right across the Beilab is Midbar Paran. You had it on the map. You had it on the map.
Where? What do you see?
Right past Eilat. One more drop. Go down one more drop.
Eilat?
Okay, on the right hand side, on the bottom, that's Midbar Paran.
This is Midbar Paran. Okay, fine. So then again, this is the Meraglim. This is not Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael, when they entered from the north. When Klal Yisrael came into Eretz Yisrael, they came in from the north, from the Yarden, all the way up over here on top. They came from north of Yerushalayim. Somewhere over here they came in. They came in from somewhere over here. We're talking about the Meraglim. The Meraglim swooped all the
Jericho.
Way down.
Jericho.
What?
The lower, Jericho.
Yerichai. Where's Yerichai? Where is Yerichai? You hear right over here, okay, fine. No, it doesn't necessarily mean that they came in from Yerichai. I think they came from higher up and they went down. They came in from more north, it seems. And then they swooped down to conquer Yerichai. I don't know. We have to learn Yeshua and see the maps. All right, any event, we're dealing over here with the southern tip. The southern tip, they're going from west, from east to west. When you get to the west, L'chor, you're coming over here to the Mediterranean. And when you're in the east, will be, I guess, today, Jordan, modern-day Jordan. Jordan obviously didn't exist then. Okay, so let's go back to our pasuk. So Rashi over here says, "Mimidbar tzin ad rechoyv loichem ashalchu begvulu beorich uvorechav kimingam." What does it mean? Halchu, they went ruach gevul drum. They traveled along the ruach gevul drum, is the southern section. Mimiktsoya mizrach, from the east ad mitzoya marav. K'moishet tzil moishet aluze banegev. Go along the south. The Negev means the southern boundary, the south, from east to west. Derech Gevul Droimis, from the southern portion, Mizrochis Ad Hayam. Shehayam, the Yam, the Mediterranean, Hu Gevul Maravi. The Mediterranean is the boundary along the west. Umisham, and once they reach the west, Chalzhu V'Holchu called Gevul Ma'aravi, they went along the entire a western side, like Al Svas Hayam Ad Levoy Chamos, until a place called Levoy Chamos, Shehu Eitzel Hor Har Hor, B'miktsoya, the corner Ma'aravis Sefayin, is the northwest. K'moish Meforish B'gvulos Arvitz B'parashas Eile Mase. So going back to our map, the map over here says they start out somewhere in Midbar Tzin. Midbar Tzin is somewhere, let's make believe, it's for the sake of simplicity, that's Ak Karak. Or Al Kat Rana. Okay, this somewhere over here is called Midbar Tzin, Jordan. And then they traversed the entire southern border all the way until they got to the Yam HaMelach. I mean the Mediterranean. The Yam HaGadol. The Yam HaGadol, the Mediterranean. Now, according to our map, the Yam HaGadol, I mean, we're really brainwashed from modern. Whoops, what happened over here? I pressed the button and I lost my map. Oh, here it is. Okay. Now we are, what's this message over here? We're brainwashed and we think that the Mediterranean, Gaza, is the end of Eretz Yisrael. It could very well be that Eretz Yisrael goes all the way down to over here. Dimona. Okay, that's where the nuclear facility is. This is where we have all the nukes in Dimona. It could very well be that where exactly is the boundary? The lowest part of the Yam HaMelach, I mean, I keep on saying that, the lowest part of the Yam HaGadol, the Mediterranean, at least on this picture, is all the way down over here, which is opposite.
What would have been the point that if below that El Arish is all Egypt? What's the point of it?
Who said it's Egypt?
There was no point
for
them to go there.
We know exactly. We don't know. We don't know. We really have no clue as to the exact borders of Eretz Yisrael. There are a lot of people who have done a lot of research. But after everything is said and done, let me ask you a simple question. What is called the Yam? What is Yam Suf? When Klal Yisrael crossed the Yam Suf, what exactly do they cross? Where is it? Is it these wadis? These little teeny rivers over here they show you on the map over here? Okay, there's these teeny little rivers over here. I don't even know where these wadis. A lot of this is a modern map. In the ancient times, what they know is the fact that there were many such rivers. They could see from satellite images that there's an indentation in the ground where once upon a time a river flowed. and those rivers have dried up hundreds, if not, who knows, 2,000, 3,000 years ago. So when it says that it was Kriyas Yamsuf, where exactly on this map is Kriyas Yamsuf? There is no agreement. Was Kriyas Yamsuf, did they go into the Mediterranean? No, doesn't seem like that. So which body of water is there in Egypt? Where exactly in Egypt were they?
They couldn't have gone into any of those wadis because they would have gone right into Eretz Yisrael. What did they do then?
Who says Eretz Yisrael? Where exactly did the ancient biblical Egypt end? What were the borders, the boundaries of ancient Egypt? And after you come out of Egypt, where are you going exactly? There was Kush. There was a land called Kush. Where is Kush on this map? Who says Kush is Ethiopia? Ethiopia is further down. There are many, many mysteries. And okay, we're looking over here at a map, a modern-day map, but there are many, many mysteries to this question. So we don't really know enough clarity on what exactly we would call the southern border of Eretz Yisrael. All we have is a general concept that they traveled somewhere around over here. This is the southern border. Was it a straight line? Not necessarily. There was some type of border along the south. When they got to the end of the border, they found themselves somewhere by the Mediterranean. That's what it says. And then they work their way up. And the Mediterranean doesn't go in a straight line, as you see. The Mediterranean goes on a curve. So wherever the southern border is, maybe the southern border is Gaza. Maybe the southern border is Ashkelon. Maybe the southern border is all the way down in this corner over here. Doesn't matter. They traversed the southern border. They came to the water, which that means they've now reached the end of the southern border. Now they're instructed to travel up the Yam HaGadol. We're calling the Mediterranean now the Yam HaGadol, and which means they're going to go all the way up the border until they come basically to Lebanon. Okay, Lebanon, somewhere in Lebanon is Hor HaHor. If I remember correctly, there are two Hor HaHors. There's a Hor HaHor somewhere over here in Lebanon, and there's another Hor HaHor somewhere where Aaron was buried. Aaron L'chayr was not buried in Lebanon. Aaron was buried somewhere in Jordan. In Jordan, there's another Hor HaHor, somewhere like over here somewhere. Somewhere maybe.
It's equivalent to the Dead Sea, on the other side of the Dead Sea.
The other side of the Dead Sea, is there's a Hor HaHor over here?
Yeah, in Jordan? There's
a man over there. So some will tell you, the truth is no one really knows where it is. But there's one thing, it seems that there's more than one Hor HaHor. Okay, let's go back to Rashi. Let's return to Rashi. I have the basic gist of what's going on. On my screen, I have all these things that are in the way. I can't see what I'm doing. Okay, back to Rashi. So one more time, the words of Rashi. Holchu, they went. The pasuk over here says, "Vayalu vayisru esaretz mimidbar tzin, from midbar tzin ad rechoiv, until rechoiv levo chamos." What is the pshuta shel mikra of this pasuk? So Rashi says in this pasuk, "Vayalu vayisru esaretz." Rashi, we'll get the Rashi back on the screen. Rashi, they would holchu begvul beorich uvorich kibin gam. Holchu ruch gvul gvul drami mimitzay mimizrach mimitzay mizrach. Ad Mitzray Maariv, east to west, Kamal Jesu Moshe Alu Zebenegev. Derach Gevul Dromi Mizrochis, Mizrochis Ad Ayam. Shayam Hu Gevul Maravi, the Yam is Gevul Maravi. Fine. O Misham Chazru Vaholhu Kol Gevul Maravi Al Sas Ayam, the entire western boundary along the edge of the Yam Ha Godol, Ad Levo Chamos. What's Levo Chamos? Shehu Eitzel Hor Hor. There's a mountain called Hor HaHor in the northwest of Eretz Yisrael that does not fit well with Misas Aaron. Misas Aaron doesn't seem to have been taking place in the northwest of Eretz Yisrael. They did not enter into Eretz Yisrael. So Hor HaHor seems to be somewhere in the desert. Indeed, there's another mountain in Jordan called Hor HaHor. So it appears clearly there are two Hor HaHors. There's a Hor HaHor in the northwest of Eretz Yisrael, and there's another Hor HaHor in Jordan. The Miktsoya Maravis Sefinis, but this the tip of the Maravis Sefinis, the northwest. Kemoisha Beferish Bigvuloi Saaretz Beparshas Elamase. Okay, fine. Now, what does the Targum say on this? Targum Unkelis on Bamidbar Usaliku Valilu Yos Aram Mimidbara Ditsin Ad Rechoiv until Rechoiv. Lim te chamos, come to chamos. Now, what I don't understand. One thing I still don't understand is, what is Rechoiv? Let's learn the pasuk. They went up and they spied Al Oretz from Midbar Tzin, ad Rucha. So it seems like Rechoiv, what is Rechoiv? Rechoiv is a location that's on the southwest of Eretz Yisrael. Is that what it means? Okay, the Yam is over. So what's Rechoiv? What is Rechoiv? Gvul Maravi, Alsas Hayam, Ad Levo Hamas. So we know Levo Hamas, the coming to Hamas, is a location in the north. We know that Midbar Tzin is a location in the south, southeast. What is Rechoiv? What is Rechoiv?
Double click on that word.
Rechoiv, they're just going to give you a translation. They're not going to give you
that is a station.
They're not going to give you the northern. Let's see, the northern limit of which. Oh, maybe he says it in number six. The northern limit of the exploration of the spies in Canaan on the road to Hamas. Okay, so he's saying over here that it's a place. If that's the case, we're leaving out the southwest. If we're going to say here in the definition over here that Rechoiv is the northern limit of the exploration of the spies in Canaan on the road leading to Hamas, so therefore it's a place. It's a place in the north. So when we read the pasuk, Vayalu they ascended, Vayasu they spied, as far as Midbar Tzin, from Midbar Tzin, which is the southeast, ad until Rechoiv, Levo Hamas. So if you would not know better, you would say they went on a diagonal. You would think they went on a diagonal from the southeast to the northwest. They cut.
They did not go by a diagonal.
So Rashi comes to reject that. If you take the pasuk literally, it sounds like, let's go back to the map. If you take the pasuk literally, it sounds like you're starting out over here. Make believe we're starting out at Az Saif, Saifi. You're starting out over here. This is the Midbar Tzin. And you're going to go Vayalu Vayasudu Esaretz, Midbar Tzin, Ad, until Rechoiv. There's a place over here, let's say it's near Tyre, called Rechoiv, and this place, Rechoiv, it borders on the road that takes you to Hamas, which Hamas must be another place somewhere else. So if you take the pasuk literally, it would almost sound like that they crossed the land on an angle. They went from here, this location, on an angle cutting right through the land. That's perfect. It would take them cut through right through Yerushalayim. Okay, it would cut through all the main place to come through Haifa, would come through, although it would be a perfect cut to the land. Along comes Rashi, and Rashi says it's not the Pshat. The Mesorah is they went Kinin Gam. And the Pasuk tells you the starting point and the end point. And when as they travel from the starting and end point, they went and they cut through, they went along, they went through the land along the south. And then once they got to the south of the land, the southwest border, then they went up to Rechoiv. Okay, we'll accept that for now because we have to go further, which is Levoi Hamas. Okay, let's go back to the pasuk. Let's go back maybe to the Targum very quickly. Maybe the Targum will give us more resource, more. I pressed the wrong button, so I lost it. Okay, let's get back. Well, here, no, here, okay, fine. Let's go back to the pasuk.
According to where there's a footnote here in the Artscroll.
Yeah.
It's almost like a right angle. They went at a right angle. They came from
Kimingam, as Rashi says. But the point is that the pasuk is not telling you that. What Rashi is telling you, Ikar Chosar Min HaSefer. According to what we're assuming now, is we have two locations, Midbar Tzin and Rechoiv Levoi Hamas. These are two specific locations. If you take the pasuk literally, it seems like they went on a perfect angle through the land. They went on a straight line, which would basically cut through the land on an angle. Rashi says, do not learn the pasuk that way, because the Mesorah is that they traversed the land kimin gam. Holchu b'gvuleha b'arechu v'rechav kimin gam. How do you know that they did not cut through the land? So Rashi proves it, I'm right. Because you cannot look at this pasuk in isolation. You have to look at the context. And be that Moshe says, Alu ze banegev. Since Moshe gave them direct orders that you should not cut through the land, but you should travel along the southern side, so that forces us to assume they went to the south until they hit the end, which is the Yam HaMelach, and then they moved up to Levi Chamos. Rashi is telling you it has to be, it was Kimin Gam like an angle. You cannot ignore that. Now, let's go look at what says the Targum one more time. Time Usaliku Valilu Yos Ara As Yos Ara Mimid Biroth from the desert, Ditsin, Ad until Rechoiv Limte, which takes you to Hamas. Now, from the Targum itself, there's no indication. From the Targum itself, the Targum is not coming to deal with the contradiction with other psukim. If you would just learn the Targum and you would not learn Rashi, you could very naturally come to the conclusion that if we assume that the word Rechoiv is a location, they spy the land from the southeast to the northwest on a straight line, which would cut right through the land. If you learn the Targum at face value, Rashi comes along and is embellishing the pasuk and is telling you, is Rashi coming to disagree with the Targum? Is there possibly a machlekes? Would the Targum mislead you? Would he mislead you and leave out a critical factor in exactly how they traveled the land? I don't know. You have to, and anyone that's going to want to tell you they went on a straight line from the southwest corner, southeast corner to the northwest is going to have to deal with the pasuk that says, you're going to have to find an explanation of the pasuk that says, Vayalu Banegev. Moshe told him to go the Negev. How are you going to explain that pasuk? Unless you want to say that the spies had an agenda. The very fact when the spies came back and they spoke Lashon Hara goes to show they couldn't care less what Moshe told them to do. They did whatever they wanted to do. They had their own agenda. Whoever said that the spies followed orders? We know when the spies came back, they defied Moshe. They said that it's not a good land. We don't want to go to Eretz Yisrael. So who says that the spies followed orders and traveled the land the way Moshe Rabbeinu instructed them? Very good. Moshe told them to go in this direction. Who says they did so? So here you see this is something that's very interesting. This idea that we're dwelling upon is something, is something that brings pause when you learn Targum. Targum is very vague many times. And when the Targum is very vague, it opens up possibilities that we would not necessarily pay attention to. Targum does not tell you every single detail, and the nuance of his words doesn't seem to indicate anything other. And just the simple reading of the pasuk, according to Targum, would seem that not necessarily agree with Rashi. So, that's a very important point. You have to look at other mafarshim. When you look at other mafarshim who disagree with Rashi, then you come back to Targum, and then you begin to wonder, who says the Targum and Rashi are on the same team? Maybe the Targum disagrees with Rashi. Let's go further.
Or you could say that Targum did not feel that he wanted to elaborate.
That's possible also. Absolutely. 100%.
He disagrees. He just says...
Right. That's not his job.
To tell you which... They went south, they went north.
He didn't view that as his role. Exactly, he did not view that as his role. But sometimes the pasuk is so misleading, the Targum doesn't hold back. When the Targum wants, he embellishes the pasuk with what he wants to say. Okay, we've learned that Baruch Hashem many times, Targum doesn't just accept everything at face value. Targum has a tendency to inject things that are not obvious in the pasuk. So he's saying over here that in this case it was too complicated, he didn't want to get involved, it's not relevant to the discussion.
Just quiet. He accepts they went from here to there. How they got from here to there, for whatever reason, Talapho was not...
Could be. Or he disagrees. Okay, or he disagrees.
He felt it was important to embellish.
Okay, or maybe the Talapho disagrees. See, that's the mystery. That is the mystery. But before you do something like that, you have to go look and you have to find a Rishon that explicitly says, not like Rashi. When you'll find a major league Rishon that is accepted by Klal Yisrael, not all Rishonim are accepted. They've discovered a lot of things from the times of Rashi And you know, there are people who sit the whole day and they, you know, they work on it, and they publish svarim. But everything is said and done. Who are these people? Were these people Talmidei Chachamim? Were they bought?
I'll give you an example. The Ramban. I'm reading the Ramban on the Ramban says the Kodesh Baruch Hu did not send his wives. He says Beferish. No. What happened was Moshe Rabbeinu agreed to send spies, but he only wanted to send two. So Kodesh Baruch Hu came along and said, well, you know, you got all these shvatim, you got to send two for each, one for each, don't just send two. You see, I know Chinami, they were Rishonim that argue on that.
So if you'll find that's the way you learn Targum. Before you dissect the Targum, see, in the same that I use with the Ma'at Sari, that's really what he does. That's what he does. He'll never go say a chiddush in the Targum unless he can back it up with a Rishon, a major league Rishon. The Ramban, the Sipurno, the Rashbam, you know, he'll back it up. Oh, look, you see other Rishonim strongly disagree with Rashi. So now when we look at the Targum, if we want to be Medayik, we can suggest that the Targum and Rashi disagree. Something which you would not otherwise think about. Okay, let's go further. Vayal v'negev, now he says, look at this Pasik. See, this Pasik, it says here, Beferish, Vayal v'negev. So, okay, so this is part of the equation. You just can't ignore this Pasik. It says that the spies, they went in the south. Vayavo, and they came at Chevroin. V'shaman there, they discovered the giants. They discovered the NBA. They saw a basketball game going on in session with all these people that were 8 feet tall. Vayalu vanegev, vayalu chevrein. V'sham, who did they discover? Achiman, Sheshai v'Salmai, three brothers. Who are they? They are the Lidehan Ho'anok. These are the children, the kindelach of the giant. Who's the giant? Who is the giant? Doesn't say who the giant is. What was his name? The Chevroin. What about Chevroin? Sheva Shanim Nivnasa. It was built 7 years prior. It was built Lifnei Tsoyan Mitzrayim. And what does this mean? There's a lot of perish on this. Rashi, first in this pasuk says, they went Vayalu Vanegev and they came to Chevroin. Kol Lev Levadoi Chalach Sham V'Nishtateach Al Kiriyavo Shlo Yehi Nislas L'Chaveirov L'Yos Batsasa. So Rashi over here is coming to Bimdek, why it says Vayovo? Why doesn't it say Vayovo'u? Vayovo'u B'loshin Rabin. It says Vayovo is B'loshin Yochid. It says Vayalu, they ascended. So then it should say Vayovo'u. They arrived, they traveled, they came until Ad Chevroin. Why is there a change in grammar? Vayalu, it shifts to Vayovo. So Rashi is saying, because the Pasuk is teaching you, Pashup Shat, although all of them ascended the southern side, only one person took a detour to go to Chevron. Who was that? This was Kolev ben Yefune, the Nasi of Shevet Yehuda. Right? Is that correct? Kolev Shevet Yehuda? Mr. Rapport, is that correct? Okay, Kolev ben Yefune is the only one. Why only Kolev? Because Kolev realized that all these people are going to, they're all going to, he already discovered, it's mashma, what their agenda is. Their agenda is to slander the land and not go into Eretz Yisrael. He already discovered, he did not want to be affected, influenced by their intimidation. So we went to be Mispalel. Where did he go to be Mispalel? The Kivrei Avos. This Pasuk is one of the most important Pasukim for Judaism. Not that we need a Pasuk, because it's Mesora, is that there is an Inyan to go be Mispalel at Kivrei Avos. If not for this pasuk, who says there's an inyan to go to a kever? When a person dies, his neshama goes to Shemayim, so why would a person, what benefit would there be going to the grave? Who even says we should bury people? Who says the burial is a good thing? And if a person is this buried, or why is there a need for a person to go visit the burial spot? What benefit is one going to gain from going to a grave? A grave, Adrab, a grave is a Tomei Meis. It's Tumah. This Tumas Meis is the most severe form of Tumah. So how could it possibly be that a person should go to a Mokaim, which is the highest form of Tumah, to be Mispala? Being Mispala to Hashem is the highest form of Kedusha. Tahara. It's a contradiction. Davening at a Kever is the ultimate contradiction. When you daven to Hashem, you are metahar yourself. Before you daven, you go to a mikvah, you go to mikvah. You put yourself in a state of tahara. And where are you going to get to mimispalel? At a kever. A kever is the avi avoy satoma. It's a contradiction that there's no way to explain this contradiction. And if not for this pasuk, we would say it cannot be. Tefillah is about tahara, kedusha, and there's nothing whatsoever to gain by going to a cemetery. Nothing. Along comes this pasuk, two words. How many words? Three words. Vayavo ad Chevron. Three words have changed the entire dynamics of Klal Yisrael. Although in a Chanami it's a contradiction, it's Avi Avos Atoma, yet there is an inyan to go to a cemetery to daven by Kivrei Avos. Rashi, Vayavo kolev levado holach shom v'nishtateach, he lie down, al Kivrei Avos, he was nishtateach. It's a very powerful word. What does it mean, nishtateach? What does that mean? When a person, you know, because this is the reason I'm saying this, because what are you going to answer? You're going to be a very obvious answer. When it says that Yishkos will go to a grave, it's a contradiction. When you're davening to Hashem, you want tahara, you go to mikvah, you come to a grave, it's very simple. Don't go within Dalet Amos. Don't go within the Dalet Amos of the grave. Make sure there are no trees. Bring in a gardener, cut down the trees. This way you have the best of both worlds. You're in the vicinity of a mace, and you're tahar. Right? Isn't that a very logical thing to do? That's what Kohanim do. Okay? They have a lot of cemeteries, parts of cemeteries that are made specifically for Kohanim. They're buried along the perimeter. I have a relative, family of Kohanim, my second cousins. They're all Kohanim, and their father is buried along the edge of the cemetery, and the children go there. They go there on the yard side. They go in the street, and from the street they can mamash see the kever. And then I know someone else is a Kohen, and Imamashi goes into the cemetery. He's buried right when you come into the cemetery, and there's a section for Kohanim, and the cemetery makes sure there are no trees in that area, and they go, but they just don't go within Dalet Amos. They have such arrangements. So maybe that's what it means. Now, if that's what it means, you cannot say that, because Chazal used this term which changes everything. V'nishtateach. Nishtateach simply means you lie down on the grave. You spread out. Now, you don't see anyone do this today. You don't see in the cemetery people lying on the grave. That's really what it means. They said that the Lubavitcher Rebbe, he did this. The Lubavitcher Rebbe would go to his Shver's Kever, I think very often, and he would lie down on the grave. Lie down on the grave. V'nishtateach. So if you're lying on the grave, it's Avi Avos Atoma, no matter what. There's no way out of it. And this tahara, you have to be tahara, you have to go to the mikvah. So this is like para aduma. Para aduma, the one that does the tahara becomes tameh, and the one that's tameh becomes tar. How could that possibly be? This was the big mystery. You don't need to go to para aduma. Today, it's the same exact thing. A part of the big mystery of para aduma is found in tefillah itself. The inyan of being mispalel by a kever, of being nishtateach al kivrei avos. And he did this wash, lo yeh nisos lechaveirov, he should not be nisos lechaveirov. What is it? You have to be Rashi very precisely. Nisos be tested lechaveirov by his friends, lechiyos ba'atzosa. Rashi over here is saying that there's a nisoyer. Rashi's words are very precise, they come from Chazal, that Kolev ben Yefune was now involved in a nisoyon. Just like Avraham Avinu was posed with ten nisyonos, Kolev ben Yefune was posed with a nisoyon. Who was Kolev? Kolev got a bracha from Yehoshua. Yehoshua, what was Yehoshua's real name? Hoshea. Where did Hoshea get the yud from? Sarai. Who was Sarai? The wife of Avraham. Avraham had 10 nisyonos. Now, Avraham and Sarai were a team. They were a team. A team. They were a team. Kolev ben Yefune. I'm getting over here a little mixed up. Over here, Moshe sent Yehoshua. Yehoshua had the bracha of Moshe, and Kolev did not have the bracha. He went to the Mispal Kiryavos. Let's see the Rashi. Friends. Okay, so over here Rashi says quite a mouthful over here. Kalev, he got Chevron. Why did Kalev get Chevron? Because Kalev, it's an amazing Rashi. Because Kalev appreciated. Vayaluva Negev, Vayavo ad Chevron. Because Kalev, he appreciated who was buried in Chevron, and he went to Davin there, to Hashem, that in the Zuchus Ovitz, he should not be tested. He should be omitted in the Nisar, not be influenced by the intimidation of all of these people, of all of the other spies. He was blessed that he, when they conquered Eretz Yisrael, his chelek was Chevron. It's an amazing thing. It's an amazing Rashi. Kolel v'adar halach shav, v'nishat echal kirielos. So Kolev went along. Number two, he lied down on the graves. Why? He was mispalel, shlo yihei nisos lachaverav. It's very hard to translate those words. He should not be tested by his friends. His friends were challenging him to believe in them, to be persuaded the land is no good. Liyos bat sasam. V'chein oimer. V'lo, and in reward for this, through the help of mispalel nismokayim, Hashem promised him that he's going to get this land, the land that he stepped upon. Etin es arta shar darach ba. Uch siv, another pasuk says, Vayidu l'kolim es chevron. Okay, sheva, now, it says about chevron, it was sheva shalom nivnesa lifnei tsoan mitzrayim. Now what does that mean, tsoan mitzrayim? Efsha shabona chom es chevron l'knan b'noi hakotan koidim sheyivne es tsoan l'mitzrayim b'noi hagodol. So Rashi was coming to ask the question, who built chevron? Chevron was a city. It was built by Chom. Okay, Shem, Chom, and Yefes. Chom was Noach's second son. Chom was, I don't remember which one he was. It's a whole shot what the order is. But Chom built two cities, at least in our context. He built the city of Tsoan, and he built the city of Chevron. He built the cities for his children. He took care of his children. When you take care of your children, you first take care of the older child, and then you take care of the younger child. So the question is, how could it possibly be that Chevron was built 7 years before Tsoan? Tsoan of Egypt is the name of the country, Tsoan is the name of a city. How could it be that Chevron was built 7 years before Tsoan? Chevron was built for the younger son, and Tsoan was built for the older son. So it should be the other way around. Efshar, is it possible? Shabon Chom es Chevron l'Chanan. Who did he build the city for? He built it for Kenan b'noi hakotan. Koidim before sheyivne, he built a Tsoan for whom? For Mitzrayim b'noi hagodol. Can't be. You don't go build the city for your younger son before you build the city for your older son. Ella, so the answer is, when it says over here, Shem Nivnesa, the word Nivnesa does not mean built. It means quality. Ella shahoisa nivuno mikbechol tov al echod mishiva batzayin. It was 7 times better than tzayin. Uvoli adiach hashiv. Let's come and tell you the shevach of the land of the shevach of Eretz Yisrael. Remember, Chevron is in Eretz Yisrael, and Tsoyan is in Egypt. So Egypt Tsoyan was the best of Egypt. Chevron was the worst of Eretz Yisrael. And yet, the worst of Eretz Yisrael is 7 times better the best of Mitzrayim. So what is it? There's no land that's more rocky, has more rocks than Chevron. That's why Chevron was dedicated as a cemetery. Lefichach hiktzua l'kibos mesim. Egypt was the best of the world. Mitzrayim was a garden. Mitzrayim is the best of Egypt. So Egypt was the best of the entire world, and Mitzrayim was the best of Egypt, and yet the best of Egypt is not even 1/7 of the quality of the worst of Eretz Yisrael. That's where the kings lived. Shememar, ki hayu vitzoyin sarov, v'hoy zachevron toiva mimena, shiva chalakim 7 times. So now we know the poshup shah the pasuk is, they came until Benegev, they went up the southern side, v'yalu v'negev, they traveled along the south, they came at Chevron, only one person came, v'sham who was there, Achiman, Shesh, and Salma, like the three giants, who are the children of the Anak. And what do we know about Chevron? We gave you some background. Chevron was Sheva Shonim Nivnesa, 7, and it says the word Shonim. The word Shonim doesn't really fit well. It was Sheva Shonim means 7 times, 7 cycles. Better, Lifnei, relative to Tsoan Mitzrayim. So what we learn, there's a lot here going on between the lines. Number one, the word Shonim does not mean years. The word Shonim means 7 cycles. What is a Shana? Shana means, it means to repeat. Repetition. We borrow the word Shana and we use it in reference to time. So because we borrow this word so often, we've been brainwashed that the literal translation of the word Shana is a year. There's no such thing. All the word Shana means is, it means a unit. A unit, a unit. It can be a unit of time. It can be a unit of volume. A unit of liquid, solids. Whatever you want. It's a unit. You repeat. A unit of time that is repeated is called in time, is called a Shana. But it literally does not mean time. So when it says the word nivnisa, nivnisa comes from the word mivuna. He says it means it was mivuna. Mivuna means like bina. See, what does the word bina mean? Bina means understanding. Maven dav mitach davar. It just means something that is built up. Quality, okay, this word needs to be defined. But it was Sheva Shanim, 7 units, Nivnisa, better. Then, Lifnei, relative to Tsoan Mitzrayim. Now, Mr. Rapport, the question remains. How did Rashi start off this Rashi? Don't tell me that it means it was built 7 years before, because impossible. A father does not build for his younger son a more magnificent a city before he builds it for his older son. And being that Chum had 2 sons that we are discussing, Mitzrayim and Canaan, and Canaan he gave Chevron, and Mitzrayim he built Tsoan, it does not happen that a father will build a city for his younger son before he builds a city for his older son. Okay, by the way, I don't know any father. Yesterday was Father's Day. I don't know any father who built a city for any of his children. But I guess those days was different. I guess in those days, instead of buying him, like, you know, an electronic scooter, Dad, you know what I would like? America. Buy me America. And what would you, my daughter, like? Australia. And how about you? Canada. In those days, when you had children, so for Hanukkah present, you give them countries. You build them cities. Okay, today, you buy them popcorn. And you buy them an electric scooter. They build cities. So Mr. Rabbi, my question is, okay, so we're not going to say that it means, a city. It means Zman. But if you have an older son, to which son do you give the better quality gift? You give it to your older son. The Bechor gets Pishnayim. So the question, why didn't Chum give Mitzrayim Chevron? If Chevron is superior, not just a little, far superior to Tsoan, why didn't Chum give his older son Tsoan Chevron? So I'll tell you the answer, very posh of the answer. When, you know, someone that I know, he's no longer living, that's the truth, this person, but he had, Kanayin had a lot of children. And he, I think he, either he told me or one of his kids told me, I think he had like maybe 13 children. And the first kid, he beat the living daylights out of the kid. He beat the living daylights out of the kid to make him into a mensch, to discipline him. By the time he got to number 13, basically he treated number 13 as if it was his grandchild. Take him to the candy store, buy him toys. He gives him whatever he wants. Whatever you want. I don't have koyach to fight with you. The first kid, like, you know, it's like also a newborn baby, toddler, begins to crawl on the floor. And guess what happens? You give the kid a cookie, and the cookie falls on the floor. Gewalt. The cookie fell on the floor. If the kid will eat the cookie, who knows? Who knows? There might be some bacteria. There might be a virus. There might be some dirt. There might be some schrotzim. Gewalt. So what do? You take the cookie off the floor and you throw it in the garbage. You don't let the kid chas v'shalom eat that cookie that fell on the floor. Okay, come back 2 years later, they have another kid. They give him the cookie. The cookie falls on the floor. What do the parents do? They pick up the cookie and they brush it off. They brush off the cookie from the, you know, on the outside, and they give it back to the kid. Come back 2 years, third kid. The cookie falls on the floor. What do the parents do? They pick up the cookie and they give it to the kid. They don't even bother to brush it off. Come back 2 years later, kid number four. What do the parents do? They put the cookie on the floor. Go take the cookie. You hear? That's what happens. And go ask any parent. They'll tell you it's absolutely true. There's a makor for this in the Torah, this parsha. The first child was Tsoyan. What did Chum give him? Chum says, I'm not going to spoil you, Ratan. Who do you think you are? I'm going to spoil you. Discipline. If you hold back the stick from your child, you don't love your child. So what did Chum give the first older child? So on. I'm giving you garbage. I'm going to give you Tsoyan. What did he give Mitzrayim, the oldest child? Give you Mitzrayim. I'm going to go give you Tsoyan. I'm going to give you desert land. Because you have to learn how to work for a living. What are you, I'm going to spoil you rotten? I'm going to give you on a silver platter and whatever you want? That's not the way life goes. You got to work. You got to work. You got to make something out of yourself. By the time Chum got to the youngest child, when he got to Canaan, he says, Canaan, what do you want for an Afikoman present? Anything you want. I don't have koyach to fight with you. You want Chevron? Gevaldik, I'll give you Chevron. It's because he was the younger child, that's why he got more. Rabbi Mayevsky told me, I think it's from the Abarbanel. I think Rabbi Mayevsky says, why does the Bechor get Pishnayim? Why does he get Pishnayim? Because he was abused. Would you believe this? Because it was an experiment. The Bechor is the first child. You're very excited. Someone showed me a picture yesterday of a newborn. He had a baby a month ago, a little girl, and they dressed up the little girl in a little beautiful shirt. Happy first Father's Day. This is the guy's first child. The baby's an Amish infant, like almost like a month old, 2 months old. And the little infant is wearing a stretchy that says, Happy first Father's Day. Believe me, by the time this guy gets around to this third or fourth kid, he's not going to be putting on a stretchy on his baby, Happy Father's Day. He'll have a lot bigger things to worry about than putting on a stretchy on his first child, Happy Father's Day. It's his first kid. It's his first kid. You know, it's fun. It's like a toy. So it's a toy. So you put on the kid, Happy First Father's Day. The kid, it's an experiment. What do you do with him? Do you hit him? You don't hit him? You teach him? You deny him food? How do you deal with the kid? It's an experiment. And when you do an experiment, it doesn't always come out so good. So Mamela, the Ribbono Shel Olam, keeps score. And Hashem says, listen, you're an experiment. When it comes to the Yerusha, you'll have the last laugh. You'll get Pi Shnayim. If I would say this, someone would beat me up. They would smack me across the face. But the Rabbi Nol says this. The Rabbi Nol says, you see this over here in this pasuk. You see in this pasuk that Chum he made for his children, two children. The older one he gave peanuts, and the younger one he gave the best. Because kachi darka shel olam. When a person gets older, your attitude towards your children is very different. Mashiyase hazman lo yase haseichel. Because there's a lot more in this Rashi, and we have the Targum Mail, the mission continue tomorrow. Okay, boys, I'm struggling overtime. Have a wonderful evening. Thank you for coming and listening to my whatever you want to call it. Good night, everyone.
Thank you.
Good night. Thank you for coming, Blazer.
Shkoyach, shkoyach.
Good night, Mayor.